to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, and joining me as co-host is George Kelly, the online coordinator at the Bay Area News Group's Contra Costa Times in Walnut Creek, California. He blogs, sings, and occasionally sleeps in Oakland, California. You can follow him on Twitter at @AllAboutGeorge. Welcome to the show, George.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mark.
So, what have you been singing lately?
I have been singing with a group. We call ourselves the Oakland Soft Rock Choir.
I love it.
All the cheesy soft rock hits of the 70s and 80s, the ballads, the anthems, just about everything you can think of that was a chart topper and that you haven't heard in years, unless you're at the dentist's office or listening to the Muzak at the grocery store.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. Do you guys actually perform out live?
Yes, usually at house parties. We've done a couple of gigs at breweries and restaurants, singing for our supper, sort of. And it's just really fun to go out and see people's faces light up when they say, oh, I remember that song.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's very cool. Well, I've been singing a little bit myself, kind of in an amateur style. And my birthday recently, I just did a karaoke night where we kind of rented the private room and, you know, had sushi and drinks brought to the room and everything. And it was a lot of fun.
Wow. Have you got a favorite?
As far as the style of music?
Favorite song.
I don't really have a favorite song, but I'd say, you know, there was a lot of 80s in there for sure.
Cool.
And my fiance sang an incredible rendition of Whitney Houston's Greatest Love of All, to the point where that song is still in my head. I never really liked it.
I have saw a lot of really smart write-ups of in the wake of her passing, and one of them talked about the extent to which her voice was an imperial presence over a chunk of the 80s and the 90s. You know, she didn't so much appear on the charts as she did reign in terms of how she reset vocalists and, you know, approaches to music.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, it's interesting. We, you know, one of the big things we just launched this week was Collaboration Central, a new site at MediaShift, just looking at collaboration and how more journalists kind of need to collaborate and work together across newsrooms. And there was a story today about how in hip-hop in the 80s in Brooklyn and how so much collaboration was going on in music. And, I mean, you think about all the collaboration that happens in music and different people kind of going across genres and collaborating. And we don't see that happen as much in journalism, but maybe we will.
It could happen. You have to set up the site before people can start using it and before it can start catching on. The current ways people have to hang out and meet up are useful in some respects, but we could always use more platforms.
Definitely. So let's, we've got a couple guests standing by. We'll be talking about paywalls is the big subject for this podcast and kind of the business model at newspapers with Gannett now announcing that they're going to bring paywalls to their 80 newspapers, except for USA Today. And the LA Times announcing they're going to start a metered paywall similar to the New York Times, and that's going to start on Monday. And then we'll also talk a little bit about TechCrunch, what was kind of a, you know, top tech blog, and how the mighty have fallen, and so many people are now leaving. They just got a new editor, so we'll talk a little bit about them. First, let's start talk about the paywalls and the more paywalls. You said you're not a big fan of paywalls at the moment.
I'm not a big fan of paywalls. Bay Area News Group is part of the old Media News Group, which is now part of Digital First Media. The CEO, John Payton, also the CEO of the Journal Register properties.
Right.
His take on paywalls is that he doesn't think that they work He claims, he's quoted as being said that smart original content tagged with advertising will gain value by being shared through networks. And he's seeing paywalls as something of an impediment to that sharing process. But that hasn't stopped the papers from in some markets from experimenting. Here in the Bay Area, there were paywalls briefly over at the Vallejo and Vacaville papers in Solano County. So sort of an experiment with that market versus some of the other ones.
Okay, well, let's bring on our guests and see what they have to say, and you can also jump in and ask some questions too. Jimmy Orr was named managing editor of online at the LA Times in February 2011. He directs the strategy for LATimes.com and supervises a team that produces the site and the growing portfolio of digital and mobile properties. Previously, he worked at the Christian Science Monitor and was internet strategist for President George Bush and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Glad to be on. Long time listener, first time caller.
Ken Doctor works at the center of the transformation of consumer media in the digital age. He's an author of Newsonomics, 12 New Trends That Will Shape the News You Get. He contributes to his own Newsonomics website and writes a weekly column for the Neiman Journalism Lab. He's an analyst for Outsell, where he works with companies on strategies and tactics, and he's worked at Knight Ridder for 21 years in the past. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Good to be here.
So let's start with you, Jimmy. You're obviously in a good mood, which is good. Does that relate to the paywalls? I mean, you sent some numbers that the LA Times has put out as far as page views. Just a lot of it looks like you guys have got a lot of traction online with your website, with your blogs, and now you're coming out with this wall that's going to start on Monday. And let's just to clarify for everyone, it's a metered wall, so people can still get 15 stories for free per month, and then after that, they'll pay 99 cents for the first month, and then either $3.99 a week for digital access or $1.99 a week for the Sunday paper plus digital. How did you guys come up with this plan?
Very nicely done. Very nice summary, Mark. Well, listen, it's for us. It was the right time to announce a what we're calling a membership program. We think it's an exciting time of opportunity. I think there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, and instead, the landscape is changing, and so what we have to do is look at that landscape and determine if we're going to play or we're not going to play. And it's time that we do participate. The idea that people will pay for quality journalism, that time has come. We buy it. Our we the increases of readers to our site validate it. And so, listen, it's a right time to do it. And in terms of coming up with that pricing strategy, I'd leave that to the business side, and that's something that they came up with. But they're not making decisions in isolation or based on a hunch. It's they put a lot of work into it, and we think it'll work.
What do you guys think as far as the target goes? I know that Gannett has come out and said that they are going to do a variety of paywalls, and they're saying they're going to bring in, $100 million in annual revenues. I mean, do you guys? I know that the business side of it isn't necessarily your big thing, but what do you see as kind of a goal? Because you put laid out all this great traffic numbers that have hit LA Times. I'm guessing there will be some hit on that. How does that change kind of your goals and your metrics?
Well, like you said, the business side sets the goals and targets. So we're not going to get into those, except to say that based on the growth that we've had here and the studies that we've conducted around the membership program, they are absolutely achievable. They are achievable, again, because we believe that people will pay for quality journalism. We think and we believe that our readers know the landscape, understand the choices, and value our journalism because nobody covers California better. And so in terms of the goals and targets that they've set, we think they're achievable, and time will tell, but we're very optimistic.
What do you think, Ken? You've been following a lot of the different paywalls that have come up, and is it tough for kind of the LA Times is not quite a national paper? It's a little bit more of a regional paper. Is it tougher for regional papers to do paywalls like this?
So far, it has been. We've got about 10% or more of American dailies that have put up paywalls, pay fences of some kind. And really, the big success is the New York Times, which is a national model and even global. They've got more than 10% of their customers are international. So it's a really interesting question of what's going on with local and regional papers. The LA Times is by far the biggest regional to do it, and as you point out, it's kind of a super regional. I think what we know is that while the Times has made a success, the New York Times, $80 million, 390,000 digital subscribers, most of the regional dailies, local dailies I talk to, have had mixed results. And that's, I think, because this is as much a defensive play as an offensive one. And if they're going to play offense, they need to do more overall with their products, with their promotion, and even with their content. So it isn't so much whether to do a paywall now. That's kind of easy. But how do you do it, and can you really get that, in Gannett's case, 10% bump in circulation revenue? Nobody's quite seen that yet from the people I've talked to.
What do you think, Jimmy? I mean, what will you be offering? Is there something – this is a membership is the way you're kind of terming it. Are there some extras or things that are going to get people involved and want to become members?
Well, I think so. Simply a step in our evolution. And so we believe right now, and the numbers have validated it, that the readers are valuing quality journalism. What we know is this: people will come to our site and they'll stay on our site. And so we have so much digital content that's not in the newspaper. We have so much unique content that people are consuming digitally that there's a tremendous value to it.
Can you talk about any of the things, any of the extras that you might be giving people as members, or have you not decided that yet?
Well, like I say, this is a step in our evolution. And there, like I said, there is so much content that we offer that people already find valuable that we just offer digitally. There's value to that, you know, and we'll look at things over the year, member-only digital content, privileges, to find out what resonates most with our core customers. And we expect that they'll find the membership a great value. But you know what we're going to do is we're going to slowly evolve and see what works and continue on it. But like I say, our digital content is so strong, and people have already made that vote.
I have Merlin Mann's tweet from last week on my mind, where he says, "Ah, that last week of the month when the New York Times becomes our nation's willfully mute paywall of record."
Just because he runs out of his free stories.
Yes. I would be very interested in hearing about people's reaction to hitting those limits. And one thing the Times does to its credit is I don't think stories that are discovered through social media and other channels along those lines are credited towards that. So it is possible to find stories if they've got that currency, if they're on people's lips and tongues and keyboards. If the Times is able to correct and allow for that and factor that in, they could have some interesting results.
Yeah, so Jimmy, will people coming in through Google search or through social media, will that count towards the meter?
Well, this was a topic of much discussion here at the Los Angeles Times Are we going to follow that model, or are we going to do something else? And the strategy that we decided to pursue was to implement the same structure for somebody that would go to our homepage. And so those coming through social media, those coming through search, will have access to our articles, but they'll be limited to 15 pages per month. And so that's where we are right now. You know, whether we continue with that, we'll see. But that's a strategy that we're taking early on. Again, we're not making any decisions based on a hunch or a vacuum. We're making decisions based on what we think will resonate best and what will best benefit the Los Angeles Times.
Yeah, this is Ken. I think that, you know, this question is really a question of new readers and older readers. So we know that that print readers are about 60 on average now. And a lot of these early paywalls have done a good job at transitioning over the print readers and saying, hey, you know, the online stuff, the tablet stuff, that's now a paid product, and we can give it to you as an extra value in your subscription price. Isn't that great? And of course, people are nodding and saying yes. In some cases, there's a 10% or so upcharge, either at the beginning or within 6 months, and that may yield some more circulation revenue, as I believe is Gannett's plan, from those older readers. The bigger question here is, how do you get younger readers to become actual paying customers? So this question of social availability is one of those questions there. Whether it counts for the 15 or not, this question of how do you get at the top of the funnel younger readers to come in, develop habits, and become paying customers. We're seeing that a little at the New York Times, but we're not seeing it dramatically at the local papers yet. And I think that's the big question. So this is kind of a secure and advanced strategy I see overall in the U.S. and in Europe. Secure that older base and then make plans later on to get the younger readers in and paying.
You know, that's a really good point about having more younger people in, and I'm guessing that depends on the content that you're trying to get them to. What do you think, Ken, as far as Gannett? They've got a wide range of papers, you know, smaller, yeah, medium, bigger, you know, they're kind of all over the map. Do they just have to come up with a different model for each paper?
Yeah, they've got to come up with products, and I think that the biggest challenge over the next year is for the Gannett papers, in particular in this case, but others that have put up walls, to come up with tablet products, number one, and smartphone products, number two, that really take advantage of what tablets and smartphones do. So don't repurpose, don't have PDF replica plus products and expect that that's going to wow customers and get them to open their pocketbooks. You've got to find on a local basis things like city guides and prep sports and interactive kinds of things that are going on all the time in the life of the city that the tablet and the smartphone can bring alive. We're not seeing too much of that yet. In LA, for instance, it's interesting to look at the Peel, which is a tablet product done by the Orange County Register, and that's aimed at 25 to 45-year-olds. Not a paying product, a free product, but very different kind of product coming from a newspaper company. So I think we need to see more products like that or more sensibilities like the Peel if these new products are going to step out and people are going to see real value.
What have you guys thought of what you've seen from Tackable, the company that's sort of pushing tablets and apps for phones and looking to draw on community content and participation, throwing out questions related to events, seeking photos and other items, and then sharing, but also being using some of the unique abilities of the devices, sensitivity to where people are, you know, and time of day.
Yeah, I think the model is right. I think the model is right, and we've seen it as they partnered with Media News up here in the Bay Area. I think that combination, that kind of alchemy that we need of really good interactivity and user gen combined with professional content and good video. We're seeing the beginnings of that in the Mercury News products and other things Tackable is doing, but I think it's fairly nascent at this point.
What do you think, Jimmy? I mean, are you guys developing some new things that you think might bring in younger people? I mean, you guys are in Hollywood. You have a lot of great content when it comes to entertainment. Is that something you're thinking about creating in your mobile?
Absolutely. We'll be wrapping up multimedia efforts, interactive efforts. We're aggressively pursuing a mobile strategy, and we'll have plenty of announcements to come. But there is a great opportunity here, and we will definitely be a part of it. I look at LA Now. LA Now is our top blog. It's our Los Angeles focused blog, and the growth that we've had on this, we've doubled our readership in the last year, and these aren't small numbers, big numbers, and they continue to grow. So we know this. We know there is great opportunity locally. We'll continue to focus there, and we'll continue to look at ways that we can enrich the experience for our local readers via smartphones, tablets, the website itself. I mean, there's great opportunity. And so what we have to do is we have to take a look around at the industry, see what's working, what we can offer, how we can improve on it, and act.
Well, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you coming on, Jimmy.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care. And thanks for joining us, Ken.
Why, welcome.
So now let's talk about TechCrunch, which has been kind of the center of a lot of talk lately. TechCrunch was bought by AOL a couple years ago, and its founder, Michael Arrington, said that he'd be around for years to come. Then got into kind of a scrape with Arianna Huffington over his Crunch Fund, a VC fund that was actually had money in it from AOL. And eventually was kind of fired from the site and started his own competing site called Uncrunched. The new editor was Eric Schoenfeld, and now recently he was just replaced by a new editor, Eric Eldon. And the site, Paid Content, just reported that the site lost about 35% of its traffic since Arrington left last September. Arrington himself says that the traffic was down 50%. Since then, the site's also lost a lot of its writers, including M.G. Sigler, Sarah Lacey, Robin Waters, Jason Kincaid, a lot of others, including its CEO. I guess the question is, what's next for TechCrunch? You know, this new editor seems like he has his work cut out for him.
It's hard to know which way things are going to go when you've got a unique collection of personalities, the kinds of folks who... whose reporting of voices create the connection that builds this audience. You're going to want to pull in more voices like that, more partly polarizing, partly, you know, just vanguard attitudes, you know.
It's like when you buy a property like that, you're kind of buying the people, right? I mean, you are getting something out of the brand, and, you know, there's obviously the traffic and the loyalty, but online, you know, people do go for personalities, especially at a site like TechCrunch. And when you lose when you're buying something like that, it's really about how can you make sure those people are all happy, right?
It is. And if those people are the kind of people with the strong, you know, voices, they're not blind. They're aware that, you know, they have the opportunities at some point, once they've gotten the experience under their belt, to go off and start their own ventures. And we've seen Uncrunched, we're seeing Pando Daily, we're seeing Paris Lemon. It's probably one of the rare tumblers I visit as regularly as I can.
So do you find yourself reading more kind of former TechCrunch stuff than actual TechCrunch now?
It's a diaspora at this point. It's kind of spread out, you know. I mean, these were the cats who were in the band, and now they're off with their solo ventures, and it's you know, yeah, I'm looking broadly across to see where they are, you know, in different platforms, and it's not necessarily about one single destination. And if TechCrunch, the people running TechCrunch, are able to find the kinds of names or develop the sort of talent that, you know, makes that name a marquee destination again, then then they might have something. But, you know, I'm not sure that they'll have it. Granted, they do have to keep the lights on, they do have to keep headlines moving, and if it's just hard to say right now.
It is. And, you know, online, you know how things are online. It's just things have their moment in the sun and then they go away. And it's very hard to kind of reproduce that magic, you know, when everything's hitting on all cylinders and everyone's coming and checking you out and you're the hot site. It's just, there's very few examples I can think of a site having its moment in the sun and then just kind of having this kind of hit of losing so many people and then still being able to kind of come back. So, if Eric Eldon can kind of pull this one out, it'd be pretty miraculous.
It would be. I mean, we're looking at Boing Boing. The names they've stuck, you know. They
Yeah.
the even, you know, if they're apparently the kind of folks who not only have the polarizing unique voices, but the ability to stick and last and work with and alongside and play off of each other. You know, they contribute to that central identity. It'll be interesting to see whether Uncrunched builds to the same kind of must-read, multiple-voiced property that TechCrunch was in its pre-AOL heyday. We're just going to have to see.
Yeah, and it also says a lot about, you know, I think about Boing Boing. It's like, you know, you remain independent, and you know, you give each person, you know, a part, kind of a partnership in what you're doing. Then that makes a lot of sense. When you stay independent, you know, that gives you a lot more lateral freedom. It might give people a better feeling. Once you kind of sell out to someone else, then it's just it takes on a whole different tenor.
It's not buying in. It's not seen as buying in, though. It's you're right. It is sort of a selling, a giving over, and the extent to which you can wave the pirate flag, the extent to which you can experiment and roam outside of a structure, is key. It's something that a lot of organizations are going to have to deal with in terms of how they approach digital media and building a sense of connection and community with new properties. Engagement.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS MediaShift. I want to thank my co-host George Kelly, as well as our guests Jimmy Orr and Ken Doctor. And we want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Don't forget to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS MediaShift at pbs.org/MediaShift and our sister site, IdeaLab, at pbs.org/IdeaLab. Don't forget our new site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org, where you can learn more about working together in the digital age. We'll catch you next week.